Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Danner Jr., Jim Osarski are here with you. How are we doing, Jim?
Good. Yeah.
Did we have anything to write or talk about? Yes, I felt like we went through 2 weeks of really having nothing kind of to talk about.
Right.
Of the Bengals just getting rid of a couple bad teams.
Yeah.
And it was like though what should have been 2 weeks of storylines were all thrown into the first quarter,
right,
against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And here we are. In case you didn't know, if you like the Bengals and you listen to this podcast, Andy Dalton got hurt.
Yeah. The one thing that couldn't happen.
You could argue we did the Bengals war early in the season and kind of revisited a little bit in midseason, and it's just there is no replace for any team in the NFL. You point to any team in the NFL outside of one that already has a terrible quarterback, and you tell me their quarterback got hurt, and I tell you they're hosed. It's over. You would take one that has an MVP candidate quarterback.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Yeah. It's funny, Paul, because we're always, we do these things, and it's always, barring injury. You always got to, throw that sort of qualifier out there. You know what I mean? And at some point, you just stop saying it because it's implied. You know, none of this is really possible to predict, barring it. And then it happened.
And then it happens. Out of nowhere, on a fluky attempt to tackle Stephon Tuitt.
Hugh Jackson said that on Monday, he said it was a fluke play and a fluke injury. Freak play, freak injury.
Yeah.
Because it was he said the play itself shouldn't have happened. Andy Dalton should have thrown the ball away. And the injury, Andy didn't even, make a real effort. He did the usual, quarterback, effort. And he didn't, if you watch it slow-mo, Paul, he doesn't even extend his hand. His fingers aren't even extended to make a tackle. He just kind of roll.
He went to roll in his path so as to slow him down. And he fractured his thumb.
It was
on his throwing hand.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was on the other hand, you could cast it up and
play. Oh, yeah.
Brian Fitzpatrick did that and played the next week. Had surgery and everything.
Right.
And we're not even talking about this, But it's unbelievable. And now everything's changed.
Yeah.
So let's start here, because we need to get the basics of the news element of where this is at before we go forward. Monday, Andy Dalton met with the specialist, and the best case scenario for the Bengals came out. I mean, there was a lot of discussion and thought and worry that he would be out for the year, that it would require surgery. All they knew on Sunday was that it had a fracture in there and they had to get a closer look at it. Thought it might have to require surgery. If it did, season would be over. A.J. McCarron would be leading this team the rest of the way. That's not the case. It is a non-displaced fracture, so it's just a matter. It will heal itself. And so you're looking at 3 to 6 weeks. The Bengals' take on it is it'll be a week-to-week thing. Every week they will reevaluate where it's at and see if he can go. But more than likely, he's definitely not playing this week. You can pretty much assume he's not going to play against Denver.
Right.
Week 17 maybe in play, if everything was going perfectly, feeling great against Baltimore, more than likely not. You're more than likely looking at Andy Dalton returning for whenever the first playoff game. If it heals.
Right.
But we're talking about bones healing here. So, what do you really – no one really knows, which is why they're going to be taking the week-to-week process with it.
Yeah, and it is best-case scenario for this team. And you know, the other best case scenario too, of all the the news started getting better for the Bengals after the game when somehow Denver lost to Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute. They can beat San Francisco and Baltimore with A.J. McCarron. They probably, you know what? You know, there's a clown playing football over in Denver. They cannot score. Oakland had negative yards of total offense in the first half. Negative.
Yes.
And they still won the game.
Didn't they win with 8 first downs? Didn't I see that? I think I saw that stat.
A.J. McCarron can do better than that.
Yeah.
Well, even against that defense.
Argument right now, if you lined me up 4 quarterbacks that you could play a season with, and they were A.J. McCarron, Brock Osweiler, Blaine Gabbert, and whoever the hell Baltimore trots out in week 17, whether Jimmy Clausen or Ryan Mallett or whoever, who would you take?
Based on what I saw Sunday against Pittsburgh, I'd take A.J. McCarron.
Right.
Because he was able to actually push the ball and complete passes.
He looked pretty good. All things considered, I mean, he did what you'd expect. I mean, he had one bad pick. I mean, the second bad pick, it's completely throw it up time.
Right.
I mean, he's just trying to do anything, and you know, ends up throwing a second pick. But the first one was bad. But outside of that, I mean, dude, for 282 yards, 22 to 32.
Right.
He was completing passes. He really wasn't making a lot of mistakes. Seemed to be getting him into the right reads and kind of, if it wasn't for that one play, leading a bit of a comeback. That doesn't mean that he's great or he won't struggle the next couple of weeks.
Right.
He's still a backup quarterback. He still will be making his first career start in San Francisco. But considering the opponents, in case you didn't know, the 49ers lost by 2 touchdowns at the Browns. How bad do you gotta be to go to the Browns, the team that we just saw with a complete comatose fan base, and lose by 2 touchdowns and give up 200-plus yards on the ground?
Yeah, that's not good.
That's jaw-dropping to me.
So that's where
it's at.
Yeah, and so the second seed and the bye is still in play.
Very much in play, and
having that home game, and if your MVP caliber quarterback comes back, and that's the thing too, is the fact that it's non-surgical, the fact that they are going to remove that cast and evaluate it, which means he'll probably do a little bit of rehab and you know, other things with that hand, I guess, when they take it out of the cast to do those things. I mean, yes, you don't want your starting quarterback having not touched a football or thrown one for a few weeks. But, again, if you're going to be optimistic, you know, about this team still staying on a potential path to the Super Bowl, for as bad as it looked at halftime when he came out in the cast and you're thinking, you know,
it's over,
season's over, you know, there's that glimmer of hope, especially because A.J. McCarron, you know, Hugh Jackson said this on Monday, Paul. He said, you know, he said, if A.J. McCarron came out and couldn't handle the snap, if there were false starts, if he couldn't complete a pass, if he couldn't move the offense, he's like, the city might have been on fire. As only Hugh Jackson could say.
Right.
And he's like, but no, A.J. McCarron went out and comported himself like a professional quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives everybody hope. And frankly, regardless of what you and I think or fans think, it's clear in that locker room that they believe in the guy.
Yeah. And I think what he did on Sunday was hugely important just for the psyche of this team.
Right.
Because, you know, there would be a real possibility if he went out and played badly that you would see the team have a freak out in it this week, and you start to get a bit of that spiral going, and maybe that rolls over into the game in San Francisco, where you have people playing out of their what they normally would do, you know, not doing their job, which is so much part of what they talk about here, and mining other people's fields, because I love these weird football analogies. But now you don't. Now you just go forward, you do what you do, and have A.J. McCarron execute the game plan. The one thing that Hugh Jackson's been really good at in his time here is finding the game plan that works for that week and for that situation. We saw it most of all last year when he smoke and mirrored this team to almost winning an AFC North title with everybody hurt on offense.
Right.
And finding ways to get unique situations to take advantage of whatever few matchup advantages they felt that they had. And whether that was lots of overloads and got the running game going and things like that. It, just orchestrating game plans that work for whoever they have healthy. Hugh has been a master at that here. He'll have to do that again with A.J. McCarron, and I think you probably feel pretty confident in that. Well, speaking of Hugh, I do want to bring him in because you mentioned the conversation had with him and a few other reporters in reference to what occurred on Sunday and just kind of his mentality going forward, both with A.J. McCarron and whatever his job's going to have to be, which is a challenge. So I just want to bring him in, get his perspective, and then we'll start going back in and revisiting this a little more. So, first of all, here is Hugh Jackson talking with reporters on Monday at Paul Brown Stadium.
And this has happened to several teams this year. Quarterback got nicked up and guy been out for, you know, a week or however many weeks, and you find a way to win. So this adversity we've seen before. It just hadn't been the quarterback, and I think that's why everybody's up in arms, you know. But we've been through this. I've seen it all last year. Please. This is nothing new. So here we go.
How much does last year? I think that
helps for me, you know, because I know what to expect from the group. And the group won't flinch. How much I do know. I know about the man in the locker room. They're not going to flinch. They understand what's at stake. They know what we need to get done, and we'll get it done. And to me, I always started by, well, why not write the greatest story ever? You know, we have a chance to do something very special here. And that's what the motivation is still. And it's got to be that way. And we'll approach it that way.
All your goals still in front of you, right?
Every last one. Nothing's changed. And that's what I'm saying. You know, there's no gloom and doom here. I'm disappointed. I hate it for Andy. I know how hard he's worked. I know the leader he is in this football team. I know what he means to me. The rest of the staff, but at the same time, we also know these things do happen in football. Don't want them to happen, they happen every week. And we've seen somebody have something that you wish wouldn't happen, and this is one of those things. But they're not going to say you're not playing more games, you know, or you're not going to play the rest of the schedule. So we got to play it, and we expect to play well. And I expect our offense to play well. I do. I mean, there'll be no drop-off. I mean, we're going to play. And that's what it's going to be.
How did everybody else cut the quarterback play? How the guys up front? I mean, I think the
feedback I got was good. I think there was no issues that, you know, within the huddle. I think there was no issues with cadence. But I think it's very important when a new guy comes in that hadn't played all year. We didn't have the legal procedures that way. You know, there's no drop snaps, you know. So those things you can be very proud of. So that means the work has been done by the young man. Now, everything's not tailored to him, and he didn't get all the reps with the ones to go prepare for every situational football thing that can happen in the game. So, again, that's why I said I think he showed well for his first time out there running around with the guys against a very good opponent. So the guy's been a lot of big games, and he has confidence through the roof. And I think we have confidence in him, so I think everything will be fine.
How about the timing of stuff, too, with him getting guys out of breaks at the right time, throwing mm-hmm. the right spots? Was it?
I think it was pretty good. Yeah. I mean, I think he made some tremendous throws to A.J. Green and some others. Obviously, the touchdown throw was fantastic. And like I said, he'll get even better as we go because he'll take all the reps. But I saw what I needed to see. There's fire, and there's desire and want to and determination. So you couple that with the game plan and work and creating the environment that we'll create for him that we've created for Andy, and I think good things will happen.
People talk about, well, you have to tailor it down or whatever, but a game plan is tailored down.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't worry about what other people think or what other people say. I know what this young man can do, and I have a pretty good idea. And again, I got to watch more San Francisco to see who they are and what they are, and then we'll put a plan together for them. You know, we were playing Pittsburgh last night, you know, and that's in the past now. We can't get that one back, you know. Maybe we're sitting down the road somewhere else, you know, but they won that one last night.
Do you go back and look at a lot of what he did in the preseason to kind of think about how to tailor things to that? Mm-hmm. How do you tailor things to
that? I know who the player is. I don't need to. I mean, I know what our offense is. So I'm just going to take who we are because there's also 10 other guys that are playing, you know. So you can't take one guy and then make it just him. it's got to fit for everybody. And he has a skill set that will allow it to fit for everybody. So I'm not concerned about that. I'm not concerned with what we're going to do with him. But when I say Taylor, obviously everything we did with Andy Allott, the things maybe at the line of scrimmage will be different. That's okay. That's nothing, you know, new or anything. I want him to be as comfortable as he can be and play as well as he can play. And so whatever it is that we need to do for that to happen, that's what we'll do.
One thing you've shown is you don't have a shortage of inventory of plays. So
no.
You're going to just draw from that inventory.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right. We're going to make some magic happen. That's
all. We will. Do you still feel like he can split everybody out?
Yeah, you're going to do a lot of all the motions and moving and stuff.
We're going to stop being who we are. I mean, this next man up here, you guys know how I am. This next man up, he's the next man up. You know, and so he'll go play well. We'll do whatever we have to do. You might say a formation you've never seen this week. You got to put 11 out there, though.
Call it crimson or something.
You can't put 10 out
there. Crimson look.
You never know. So,
does the running game become a little more important now to try to take some of that off of
him? I like what everybody says. Where's the running game going to come? Because now he's in there. No. I just think, what does it take to win? You know, I think, we're one game away from winning this division?
Yep.
Last time I checked.
Yep.
So that's the goal. That's been the goal since last week. It's going to be the goal this week. It's win. So if it means run it 100 times, we'll run it. If it means throw it 100 times, we'll throw it. You know, so it's whatever it takes. I don't think, you know, I know everybody says, well, that takes the pressure off the young guy. Well, maybe the team's good against the run. You know, again, I'm just now getting into San Francisco, so I'll know a little bit more when I go. If you guys asked me this 5 hours from now, I could tell you a little bit differently. You know, but well, he's ready to assume any role we ask him to play with our offense, whether it's to hand it off, whether it's to throw it, whether it's to be a manager. I mean, I don't have any reservations or limitations with him. You know, just things I will get to know more about him because it's different. He's not the backup quarterback. He's the starting quarterback for this week. So, I mean, you know, obviously there's different things that he will feel and little different things that I'll spend more time with him that way, you know, but I got a good feel.
Does he start out being fantasy?
What?
Does he start? You said you were
looking. Did he start out yesterday being a man? He threw it all over the field, right? Yeah. Gave us the best chance to win. Didn't work. So I'm not going to tell you he's going to start being a manager. He's going to start doing what we need him to do to win. That's what we're paying him for. We're paying him to win games, you know, and so whatever it takes for him to win, that's what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. If you guys think we're trying to turn around and hand it off 70 times to win a game, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Okay? There's a guy named A.J. Green and Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert, and we have too many good football players, so I'm not going to sign me, you know, our guys because of one position, because I don't think we need to. This guy can play. Please, this guy can play.
Right.
So it'd be different if we had a guy that I thought couldn't play. Maybe the conversation would have to be different. I believe this guy can play.
So there's the always delightful Hugh Jackson. What's your take on this? And I have mine as well. I mean, how much Andy Dalton's what he did best, and I think what was praised so much during the course of this year was him being a brilliant pre-snap, always getting the team into the right play, always making the right read and adjustment. For the most part, to make sure that they're getting the most high percentage looks in the matchups that they want. You lose that. I mean, you just do. You lose
right.
that with
that's
McCarron.
Experience, right?
So how do you go forward if you're Hugh Jackson? Do you take a little bit more control, a little less of it running through the quarterback, a little more running the football? I mean, what do you think? How do you approach this?
Well, two ways. One, AJ McCarron just cannot run this offense the way Andy Dalton has. Now, granted, A.J. McCarron's in his second year of the offense, just as Andy Dalton is. Difference is he didn't throw at all last year, hasn't practiced with the first team. So I don't think Hugh's going to scale back things, as he was talking about there, to the point where this looks totally unfamiliar. I think what may change is A.J. doesn't have that total freedom. Maybe he has a check. You know, maybe he has two checks. But things that he's comfortable calling, you know, you have to remember this is a really smart and veteran offensive line. I mean, even with Russell Bonine at center as another young player, I mean, at this point, the amount of games that he's played. Russell is also going to be a huge help, right? A huge help in terms of calling out protection. So there's some built-in advantages in terms of being ready to run block, pass block. So I don't think we're going to see the offense as a whole is not going to look totally different, but it's those subtleties, Paul. Yeah, where I don't know if you'll see AJ McCarron really moving things. You know, a lot of those Tyler Eifert touchdowns where one formation and then Andy just steps back and moves everyone around. I don't know if we see that as either A, as often, or B, as sort of visible like that. Maybe it's just a more subtle thing, which is a slight motion or just a slight overload.
And, hey, it might be time to find the running game that was around last year. We haven't seen that come out in full force this year. We saw it seemed like that was going in the right direction, and there was a lot of feeding of Jeremy Hill. And then on Sunday, when they really could have used it, 7 rushes for 16 yards for Jeremy Hill. A lot of that is falling behind early.
Right.
But also, he had one run of 12 yards and then 6 for 4.
Yeah.
If you are going to be a team that runs the ball and is going to be dedicated to running the ball, you've got to be more effective. And that you get a lot of off schedule stuff that happens in a game like what happened against the Steelers. So this will be a test. I mean, particularly when this is one where they should be able to just line up and run it. Hell, that's all Cleveland did was line up and run the ball, and it worked out for them. They ran for a bunch of yards,
which is hilarious because we've talked about how many times the first time the Bengals played Cleveland, worst ranked run defense in the league, they couldn't run the ball. Houston was not very good against the run, couldn't run the ball. And then yet they were able to run the ball against St. Louis and then Cleveland the second time. You would think the stats say San Francisco is very vulnerable. But honestly, at this point in the year, Paul, I don't know. I don't know if they can do that. I don't know if they can just say, we're going to line it up. We're going to go heavy. If Jake Fisher's back from his concussion or if it's Aaron Winston or whatever, and just pound it. I don't know if they can do that.
I don't either. Because they have not proven to this point, just when you see them look like they're moving in the right direction a little bit, you see a game, a game like this. So but this will be a test of that.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't think they pare it down too much. I think the biggest thing is they maybe there's a stress on safety with the ball.
Right.
Just don't
yes.
turn it over. Be a caretaker. Let this defense win you a game, and just let your playmakers make plays, a lot of short stuff, a lot of screens, obviously they'll set you up for some deep balls and take your shots when you can and hit them like you did. And he did a really nice job of pushing the ball down the field.
Yeah.
They don't want a game plan that has to look like that in San Francisco. I think you'd have to be a little bit safer with it, and I would think that they will and understand that this is going to be about him not throwing picks.
Yes.
If he doesn't throw picks, this team will beat San Francisco.
Yes.
I can't see a way that they realistically lose. I mean, there's obviously always ways.
Yeah.
But I would be surprised if they lost out there unless he does some dumb stuff and turns the ball over or fumbles or whatever.
Right.
And take care of the football stuff.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
Yeah, no, and it's and again, all year, because the schedule's played out this way. Remember way back when we talked about how hard the schedule was going to be for the Bengals?
Mm-hmm.
They've beaten all of the bad teams. I mean, because at that first, they do. And now we'll see if they can do it with the backup quarterback. But at least, as we've said, there's a real confidence that he can get the job done. So,
how many points do they really need? When they've played bad teams, bad offenses, San Francisco's that. We agree?
Yes.
San Francisco is that. They fit that mold. They've scored what? 10, 7. 10, 10.
Right.
I mean, we've seen this defense
yes.
do that. They've done a very good job of holding. And really, against the Steelers, didn't do a bad job against number one offense, holding them to 4 field goals.
Right.
The first drive, Pittsburgh goes all the way down, scores a touchdown.
Right.
And, you have a pick 6 on there, and you have another score that's basically that's late in the game. It's basically because of a pick.
Right.
I mean, they scored 33 points, but
when the game was in the balance,
you can pretty much attribute 14 of those to
right.
to the turnovers by AJ McCarron.
Right. So when the game was in the balance, I think anyone would have said, "Oh, you're going to give up 16 points to the Steelers, or 19 points, excuse me." You'd say yes. So yeah, No, you're right, Paul. I think this is a game. Now, again, on the defensive side, we're talking about Andy Dalton's injury. You know, Tyler Eifert was hurt. Is George Iloka? He did not finish the game after re-aggravating that groin injury. Vontaze Burfict had a neck injury. He came back after getting his head examined. I wrote that line because it literally was true.
Yes.
He was not diagnosed with a concussion. He went in for a head injury. Yeah. Leon Hall came out for a little while. So, I mean, but even
Adam Jones wasn't playing.
Adam Jones did not play. Although this does remind me of the Cleveland game where, like, you know, you could probably start Josh Shaw and some of these Sean Williams and get guys healthy too.
Yeah, let's real quick, because I just want to get some clarity on, you know, I had a conversation with a doctor. His name's Stephen Shin. He's the director of hand surgery at the Curlin Job Orthopedic Clinic in Los Angeles. I was just trying to get some background on sort of this type of thing and what you expect. And I just thought what he said was interesting as far as what the Bengals are going to be looking at and how you're dealing with it. He doesn't obviously have the copy of the X-ray. He's not privy to these conversations, but he can give you the traditional sense of what Andy Dalton has plays out. And I think it's interesting to hear from him set that, and then we'll kind of move forward off this conversation. So here's Dr. Stephen Shin, Director of Hand Surgery at the Carolyn Job Orthopedic Clinic in Los Angeles.
So it's most likely a non-displaced fracture, something that they think would heal fine on its own without surgery. So assuming it's a non-displaced fracture of one of the three bones in the thumb, minimum 3 weeks to get at least some healing there before I would allow a quarterback to start using that hand to throw a football again. But even at 3 weeks, you don't have complete healing. You might the fracture should be, you know, quote, sticky enough to allow just a simple throwing of the ball, and the pain should be very minimal by that point. That being said, you know, just throwing the ball doesn't put too much force on the thumb. And what I would be more worried about is him being in a game situation where if he gets forcefully hit on the thumb, or he falls on the thumb, or an opposing player, you know, grabs his thumb and twists it. That's what I'd be more concerned about rather than just simple throwing of the football. So at about 3 weeks, sure, you have some good healing there, and simply throwing the football is probably going to be fine. It's just the other things that he's kind of risked for, you know, making it worse. So if one of those things happened, like I mentioned, you know, it's probably at that point about a 50-50 chance of it getting worse if one of those things happened, then he may require surgery, which means that, you know, he's definitely done for the rest of the season, including the playoffs.
So we'll see what happens with Dalton with his comeback. I mean, it won't be a matter of pain. I think that's a good thing. He's not going to be fighting through pain when he throws. It's just going to be a matter of how healed it is. And if it's healed, he should be able to throw, and it's a matter of re-injury at that point.
Right.
And, you can get it re-injured and say, oh, well, then you'll have to have surgery. Well, if he were to re-injure it in a playoff game and have to have surgery, he'd still be back by next year, so it's a chance that they're going to be willing to take, probably, assuming that it heals in a standard amount of time.
Right.
Oh, by the way, let's talk about this. How important would getting that bye mean now?
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about the possibility you could hold Andy Dalton out. If you win in San Francisco and then you win in Denver, you can clinch a bye.
Right. There's a weird situation with Pittsburgh and Denver, right? Coming up if you're a Bengals fan.
You got to kind of, which side of the fence do you lie on who you're rooting for between Pittsburgh and Denver? If I'm the Bengals, I'm still thinking big picture, and now this bye is even more important.
Yes.
I'm pretty confident that's the Bengals that at home in the season finale, I could find a way to beat a Baltimore team that is dreadful and will have not 1 foot, not 2 feet, not their entire torso, but almost everything except for what has to be in play, not in the offseason. Could they want this season to be over anymore? Their whole team is on IR.
They just signed Ryan Mallett, a guy who couldn't even wake up in time.
Couldn't wake up in time in Houston
to help them out.
Because Jimmy Clausen's been their quarterback. You talk about quarterback problems. Jay Clausen has been out there. So I'm pretty confident they can beat Baltimore. Yeah. If we don't talk about anything today, forget about anything you talk about, you hear about playoff scenarios. If the Bengals beat the Ravens, they are AFC North champions.
Right.
You have to feel that game is in the bag before you play it.
Right.
Okay? That said, that's why I think you're rooting for the Steelers to beat the Broncos and clear your path to that yes. bye. Because if the Steelers beat the Broncos and the Bengals beat the 49ers,
you got a cushion.
They've got cushion. They can and they can pretty get, right. You know, they can
because be like, especially because yeah, with the head to head and getting in, the Broncos losses all to AFC teams. I mean, mm-hmm. all of their losses are to AFC teams.
Yes.
So it. I mean,
didn't you beat the Broncos and the Broncos are officially in the rearview mirror?
Yeah.
And now, granted, it's probably just going to come down to that game anyway.
Right.
But either way,
you want the help.
You want,
as we've learned, as if you're a Bengals fan, you've learned.
Yes, you want the help. Or you're on the other side of it. Just get rid of Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah,
and just win it, and just win in Denver, and that's what you're coming down to. Because at that point, you could officially put them away. It's a good thing's going to happen to the Bengals in that game, in one way or the other, depending on how you look at it. But there's a lot of scenarios out there. So you can pick how you want to enjoy that game. Let's talk a little bit about a few other things. Adam Jones, I think, where we sit with this, the cast on off gate that occurred last night. He had a cast on, and then everyone talked about right. how he had a cast on because he rolled into the locker room with it. And then the next day he said, man, I hate this cast. And then he got rid of it. But he still obviously did not play.
Right.
I think there's a thought that maybe he could play against San Francisco. I mean, it looks like he's going to be playing, still going to be playing through pain with this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had 2 weeks and then all of a sudden now he had to get into a cast again. I mean, this guy's going to – it's just a thing where he's going to be playing banged up all year.
Yeah, and Marvin Lewis did allow that in the press conference, that basically Adam Jones was in a cast because they needed to get him off his feet. But again, you know, Paul, we've done this here or there to on this BBP, and I know if you guys are listening to us, you follow us anyway. But both with this Adam Jones injury and even Andy Dalton over the weekend, I guess we know people here, and I think for all of the freak out that happens, right? If it was like, oh, Adam Jones is done and whatever, it's like, no, they didn't rule him out when he had a cast. They didn't rule him out till the weekend. There was a chance Adam Jones was going to play because he was
doubtful.
He gave it a go.
Yeah,
and which is what we said when Adam Jones first appeared in the cast on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Andy Dalton over this weekend with the, you know, people were like, oh, his season's over, and then we had to say no, they're not ready to go there yet.
Yeah,
so it's one of those things. So I pat ourselves on the back for that.
I think in general it's still an issue though.
Yeah, obviously, no.
I think there's a lot of want to react
right
from media, from fans, from everybody, and the one thing that we try to bring is the voice of what is actually happening.
Right.
And not put something out there to say that we have something out there on it. We may know a little, but we're not going to put out a little. We're going to put out what we have as definitive, and that's why we didn't go with that Dalton's season was likely over,
right.
or the Adam Jones thing, all the stuff we're talking about. We try to go with something that's more definitive because we want you to know when you hear it from us, you know that's what it is.
Right.
And that's been the case with all of this. And so with Adam Jones, I'm telling you that it's not cut and dry at all.
Right.
I mean, he could definitely play against San Francisco
right.
if he wants to go out there and play. To me, if it's me now speaking the way I would play it, Adam Jones would not play against San Francisco. He would play against Denver, and
yes.
then he would not play against Baltimore, and they'd hope they'd have a bye, and he would then have all – he would have played one game in 5 weeks
yeah.
under that scenario, and I think that's a lot of healing time for that foot going into the playoffs.
Right, and a lot of this, I think, in the Bengals' mind has to do with Leon Hall. How did he come out of that game against Pittsburgh? I mean, he did miss a play. He didn't really look the same after sort of tweaking that back again, and I think if Leon is good to go, they'll feel a lot better, you know, sitting Adam down again. Because that was the other thing. Leon Hall didn't play in Cleveland. That's when Adam did. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, a lot of that, they want one of those guys out there on the other side of Drake Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, and I thought Leon Hall actually acquitted himself pretty well. Yeah. Really, the whole Bengals secondary never got beat deep. It was clear their plan.
Right.
Do not keep beat deep. Keep everything in front of you and tackle.
Tackled well.
Part of the problem was why they couldn't get off the field on third down was the front four didn't get as much pressure
right.
as they would have liked. And it started with the guy that I jinxed by writing a big story on Geno Atkins, who just didn't
great
have...
Great story, it was.
Thank you, but he did not have a great day. He did
no,
not
he did
live
not
up to any of that. He had an okay day, but it wasn't like he had been, which was just completely wrecking game plans. If he does that, I think that's probably two or three more third downs that aren't converted, and maybe it's a little different ball game. But no reason to talk about Pittsburgh anymore because there's plenty of other storylines going forward. Although I do want to, you mentioned Drake Kirkpatrick, so I kind of want to bring him in. I thought it was interesting what we saw in the game against Pittsburgh. I'll tell you what, I have never, and you know, you've covered different games than I have. You cover the Packers and all that, and I've been around here for covering the Bengals since 2010 and a lot of college before that. I've never seen a game that was two teams that didn't just dislike each other, but actively hated each other and wanted to take it out on them over the course of the entire game. I mean, after the whistle, almost every play, the pregame fight, and we're just sitting right there eating our breakfast. I'm commenting on the bacon.
Right.
Next thing you know, it's scuffle at midfield. We got to run to the window right and see what's going on.
Guys are getting painted up.
And it was. I mean, you're talking about, this wasn't just about two teams disliking each other. This was about team. I mean, it stemmed from the stuff that was over the line with, you know, where you have the tweet after the last game from Vince Williams about,
right,
you know, I'll see you. I'll paint him up on South Beach if I see Montez
right
Perfect. And then before the game, Marquise Flowers, who's on IR, linebacker of all people,
right,
puts out a tweet about, I want today to be a mass murder and I want right their necks.
Right.
It's like, no, this is taking it too far. But that was the level, my point being, that was the level of anger it was played at. And that was apparent from the
right
first snap all the way to the last one. And the Bengals admitted after the game, it bit them, that they played without poise, that they got baited into a game that they didn't want to play.
Which is funny because all week long, I mean, Drake Kirkpatrick, as we'll hear from him, I mean, he put it out there. He said, let them be the village idiots.
Yes.
Now, granted, the Steelers had a ton of personal foul penalties. Mike Mitchell knocked Tyler Eifert out of that game, in my opinion, on purpose. I mean, he went for a headshot and delivered one, and Tyler Eifert was concussed. A.J. Green was body slammed out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in that, it still seemed like the Steelers, it didn't adversely affect them. And I don't know if that was because Andy Dalton got hurt and A.J. McCarron just wasn't going to be able to move the offense in the same way. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the starting quarterback is in, if all those extra penalties, you know, 30 yards of penalties on A.J. McCarron's first possession, and the Bengals drive stalls and Mike Nugent misses a field goal. If that's Andy Dalton, do they score a touchdown? I don't know. You know.
You don't know. I mean, it's a completely different game for that fact. How about Marcus Gilbert?
Yeah.
I mean, Marcus Gilbert coming out after the game. First of all, I mean, he called Wallace Gilberry a clown. He said to a member of the Pittsburgh media, first off, Wallace Gilberry is a clown. And second off, you make sure he knows that
right
I said that he's a clown. And then, of course, went on a tweeting bender, as all angry players apparently do now.
Right.
And what turned into a Twitter war after the war.
Right.
With Martin
Adam
Gilbert
Jones
saying, "Hey, I wanna get the Bengals in the playoffs where they always choke,"
right?
Which is kind of ironic from a guy who's 0-2 in the playoffs, never
right
won a game there. But you know that, and then Adam Jones sends an Instagram rant out with a bunch of Fs towards
right
Pittsburgh, blah blah blah.
Right. Ramon Foster from the Steelers was tweeting out, you know, it's unbelievable.
It was.
Charlie Batch weighed in.
See Batch?
Yeah,
like,
Charlie.
Oh
yeah, he's slowing down Vontaze Burfict plays, and you're right. I have covered other teams, and nothing. I mean, the Seahawks and the Packers have a real rivalry. They don't like one another, but it's not like this.
No, this was personal.
Yeah, this was,
and
definitely
they played it like it was personal.
Right. There was intent to injure, and I mentioned the Mike Mitchell play, and I think even the Antoine Blake body slam AJ Green. There was intent to injure the skill players. The Andy Dalton thing was a fluke, but they went after those guys.
Yeah,
but yet in the end, the Bengals, as you said, Paul, it seemed to adversely affect them far more.
That's the way, you know, the Steelers have been. I mean, Steelers Ravens used to be like this, the exact same way.
Yeah,
with talk and then with a game that just was a bloodbath. I mean, those Steelers-Ravens games, you know, during that heyday of that rivalry, which isn't that long ago, were some of the most brutal games the NFL's ever seen. I remember specifically over and over again watching them because it always would end up on whether it was a playoff game or whether it was a game on Sunday Night Football, and you would just watch and say, God, I can't believe these guys do this to each other. They just kill each other for this. Well, that's what the Bengals have become. The Bengals and Steelers is the new rivalry in the North as the Ravens fall off a little bit. And that's what this was. And this is the type of game the Steelers play, and I think the Bengals got baited in a place that they were uncomfortable. I want to bring this in. I want to bring in Dre Kirkpatrick, who touches a little bit on that topic, but also kind of goes off a little bit on a number of different topics. And, you know, he ended up, they were offsetting personal fouls with him and Antonio Brown on the first play, and he brings up a concept of a high-profile guy and him sort of having to fight that uphill battle. There's just a number of things, and Dre kind of is Dre, who's just a really unafraid to say anything type of guy. And so here's a little bit of Dre Kirkpatrick. This is actually from after the game in the locker room against the Steelers on Sunday.
We left a lot on the field, you know. Penalties, I still want to say, man, on refs, bro, they need to be mic'd up, you know. One ref come up to me and was like, hey, sorry, he made it on the back shoulder. He was like, hey, he made a bad call, you know. And I'm like, how is that possible? You know, how is that possible?
That's the one that was the
original left judge. The left judge, first off, the incident at the beginning of the game when he hit me in my face, I don't care if he trying to tap me in my face. This is a hostile environment. Yeah. You wasn't going to call that flag unless if I would have never responded. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of that, man. You got to give us the same respect that you get these, whatever you want to call profile guys, you know?
Did he punch you in the helmet?
He hit me first. Yeah. You know, when you go back and watch the tape, you're going to see it. I kind of waited because I'm seeing this, the ref going to throw a flag, but he kept walking up on me, so I'm just going to take it what it is. You know, we get fined, it is what it is. I ain't even tripping.
So you're saying the one where you get the one that they originally called out of bounds, that they were overruled, it was
what
out
was
of bounds.
What was the flag? Well, where? Yeah. Yeah. What did I do wrong?
That was the holding call.
What did I do wrong? Yeah, right. He's in my body.
And that's what one guy said he screwed up.
The left back judge called it pass interference. The center, the judge that was in the center of the field walked up to me and said, sorry, bro, that was a bad call by him. Come on, man. Why you can't come and help overrule that call? Yeah. I don't get it, man.
When Joe asked you if it crossed the line, you said it did right at the beginning. Were you talking about the incident with you and Brown, or were you talking about the pregame?
Just how the whole situation was handled. I feel like that guy should have been fined for what he said to Andy. I mean, Vontaze over the internet. So, you know, that's where it starts. But we ain't here to make excuses. You know, we knew what type of game it was. We knew it was going to be a hard-fought battle. And those guys, you know, they got the best of the end of the stick today.
That is chippy as a game as you've ever played in, though. I mean, it seemed like after every play there was something going on.
Yeah, man, we just got to learn how to just play within ourselves, man, and not feed into the things that they're trying to do.
Pretty good chance they'll be the team coming here as the wild card for a playoff game. Would you welcome another
shot?
I hope so. Do you want to bench this one, or?
I just want to play them again.
All right, so there's Dre unafraid to really just kind of let it loose and say the way he feels and thinks that Antonio Brown is a profile guy. He is adamant that refs need to be mic'd up. And I think I actually am, you know, players just say things a lot.
Right. Well, remember Cam Newton said Ed Hockley tossed him earlier in the year.
Yeah.
You know, saying only young guy, you're not old enough for that call or something to that effect.
Why aren't refs mic'd up? Is there a reason why they're not? Is it for the league to protect itself against this type of stuff that these players are talking about?
You would think it'd be the other way around, that you'd want them mic'd up. And, you know, we don't need to hear it necessarily.
No, but the league should need to hear it.
Yeah, we could spend another 30 minutes on just, like, bad officiating. Honestly, the next move for the NFL is full-time officials.
It should have been.
I still think people
don't
know that.
How did that not happen?
I still think people don't really know that these guys aren't, like, they have real jobs, like, that they work at Monday through Friday and then get together on Sundays to ref Turkey Bowl. It's basically what's happening.
You're obsessed with turkey.
Yeah, we're going to see some more turkey ball football with Blaine Gabbert, clown Brock Osweiler. Dude, that guy is so done. After, you know, Peyton Manning needs to play for that team. Anyway, so full-time officials and mic them up.
Mic them up. No, I would agree because they're full-time. There's more of a sense of accountability right. of your employees. And there's so much that happens out there after the game. And I think the way that these referees do discuss controversial plays, do talk about it, I think you would get a better feel for exactly how these things are being approached and maybe ways to fix the any communication issue that does happen on the field. I mean, Dre saying that the one judge is saying one thing and the center judge is saying, oh, sorry, he missed that call. Well, those are conversations I think that would be interesting for Dean Blandino to hear.
Right.
That type of stuff, or the thing with Cam Newton or whatever. Well, I'm with him in that. I don't understand why there you wouldn't want that. Why you wouldn't want to
especially
hear
in a league that is
saying.
So about checks and balances and after the fact reviews of things and apologies and, you know, this was missed and, you know, Alvis Dumervil thing going on in Jacksonville mm-hmm. and, you know, which maybe we might touch on later. And that's so jaggy. I get what he's saying. I mean, on the other hand, don't let the guy catch the ball. I mean, there's still an element to that, but I do get Dre's point in some of that. But
well, he didn't catch the ball. He was out of bounds.
Right. Well, but you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying. I do think, though, in a year where officiating's been so bad, there should be a discussion about that being a way to help with accountability.
I don't understand how it's not in a billion-dollar industry.
When everyone, it seems like everyone on the field is mic'd up anymore. Yeah. You ever see those player mic'd up lists that they have before games? They decide who it's going to be. I mean, they're long. Yeah. They mic up half the damn players out there. So I'm sure they can hear some of it, but you should have a mic inside of every one of those referee huddles when they discuss plays.
With full-time officials. Multi-billion-dollar league.
Yes.
Where your games are being decided by guys who have to work a regular job.
Yes. Usually they have good jobs.
It's still a job.
I assume Hockey Lee's just a physical, just a trainer. Although he's not, I know he's not. But I would love to see that he just does nothing but pump iron the other 6 months of the year.
Yeah,
just train.
Well, you know what?
CrossFit.
Yeah. Oh, he's definitely CrossFitting.
Yeah. And you think he like when
in his
they,
in his
you
lawyer
think when
office.
They're in those you know before the game when they all are just meeting up just you think how many people on the field before the game think he just talks about his CrossFit because you know what people who do CrossFit love to do.
Talk about CrossFit.
They love to talk about CrossFit. So there's no doubt he is talking up everybody about how CrossFit he is, without a doubt. You know what? This tangent is a great opportunity for us to do something we've been looking forward to doing for a while, and now it has finally happened. The Jaguars beat the Tennessee Titans 51-16, and they are within one game. One game, I tell you, of winning my bet with one Richard Skinner of Local 12. So it is that time. It is officially that time, a long-awaited moment, where Skinny will make his triumphant return to the podcast. So here we go. Let's bring him in and let's hash this out. It's time for the most extended, intense version ever of That's So Jaggy. Oh, now what we've all been waiting for. This is a special moment here on the BBP. Welcoming back our good friend, who's been the topic of conversation all year in our weekly feature, That's So Jaggy. And
you two are two couple of Jaggies as well.
there's no doubt about that. I'm excited to bring back Richard Skinner. Skinny, now, of course, with Local 12. And, you know, this has been quite a year for us.
I'm honored to be back. There's no question about it.
You know, we were just two guys.
Where's my participation fee for this?
Listen, whatever you need, I'll have the Inquirer write you a check. I don't know when it's going
to
get there.
A gift card to the precinct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't think we go that upscale.
Darn it.
We have to do that's all out of pocket, as I've found out as I try to get this meal expensed. let me tell you, we sat long ago now we sat in the hotel bar in Oakland.
The San Ramon Marriott. I remember it well.
Yes.
It was a cold gray evening.
It was.
And quite blurry, I might add.
Yes. And we sat in there, and the topic of the season and teams and who would be good and who would be great. And you were still berating me for my love of the Jaguars from last year.
And it was a correct beration because they were an abomination last year.
They were bad.
And this was amazing as the new outsider.
You're looking at this
point. This was an amazing moment that was happening before my eyes.
Yeah.
Week one.
So for those that don't know, at this point, during that, the topic of the Jaguars came up, and we were going. I think we had the whole list out of all the overs and unders for teams for this year. And you or me, I don't know who said it, said, "Well, what's the Jaguars?" And then all of a sudden, that 5.5 came out, and we both had very decisive reactions. Mine was, of course, they're going to win at least that many games. And you said you are absolutely crazy.
Yep. Not a chance, I believe I said.
Not a chance. And it was a fun thing. We were kind of having a back and forth. And then it was, how about we put a little money on it?
How about we do that?
We do that. And I'm thinking at that point, yeah, you know, I mean, Applebee's. You know, and we could do something like that, maybe a six-pack or something like that, your standard fare when it comes to bets.
And I erroneously then decided I was going to challenge you and challenge you big time.
Yeah, and you did. You did.
I was looking to shut you up. I was looking to make this nonsense stop. So I threw out, how about dinner at the precinct?
At the precinct.
And
the
best part, you did a double take and went, bleh.
I did a double take and I said, hold on, let me double check the numbers.
And the best part about this, again, I had no idea what the precinct was. The reaction at the bar of everyone else was just kind of like the eyeballs turned. I was like, okay, this is way more interesting than just a standard bet.
Yes way more.
Really turned into
not
something.
Like a good six-pack or
no.
Yeah, or like an Applebee's gift card or, hey, I'll take you to lunch someday at McDonald's. Not
if
even
you're
close.
Going there for dinner and you're not on the appetizer portion of the menu, you are not under $60 or $70 for that plate. And that's not counting the a la carte.
That's with ice water and no tip and a la carte.
Exactly. Exactly. So as this year has unfolded, it's really been amazing, the drama every week, because no win outside before this week when the Jags –
has ever been easy.
Has ever – or have they deserved, really? There's been
a couple of losses. I'll give you this. It's been both ways. There's been a couple of losses they didn't deserve either.
And Jason Myers, I did see this weekend, has missed 7 extra points. This rookie kicker, although he did deliver me a big win in Baltimore, but that guy has killed me all year.
If he doesn't make that kick with what's left on the schedule, I don't think you have a chance in Hades of getting there. So as bad as he's been,
yes.
And he's probably cost you a win or two, as bad as he's been, he got you clearly the swing win of the season by making that long field goal against Baltimore.
What percentage of this meal is Elvis Dumervil potentially paying for you? Have you contacted him?
I wrote him a personal letter. I kind of berated him. You know, I'm a Kentucky grad. He's a U of L guy, so that kind of led to some of the venom as well. And I said, I figure you owe me. Hey, Elvis, you owe me. I haven't heard back.
No, I've not heard back from him. So it's been fun as this has gone along. And I said the whole time, I said, well, once we get to where it's one win away, or, you know, there was the possibility they may not have gotten one win away. I said, well, we'll have to have you on and really get into this. So now, here we are.
We're one win
after
away.
The Jaguars became only the third team, I tell you, the third team in the NFL this year to score 90 points combined in back-to-back games. Arizona, New England, and the Fighting Bortles of Jacksonville.
That's amazing to me.
That really and truly is, actually. But
it's more
what's
probably.
More amazing is he actually decided to look that up and give me some Elias crappy stat off the top of his head.
Hey, I saw it on Twitter.
Okay, there you go.
So I assume
I believe
correct.
Everything on Twitter.
That's it. It's all got to be true.
Believe things that Pac-Man Jones says on Twitter, even.
Yes. Well, you don't need to believe it or not, because he'll just tweet the video of it.
Exactly. Even better.
And you could take it word for word, but you can't air that on your station.
No, you
and
can't.
We can't put that in our paper. So now, after their 51-16 beatdown of the hapless Colts. The Colts have to be only described as hapless at this point.
Yeah. Yes. They were a Super Bowl pick, right?
For some. Wait, listen. We're
talking about other season predictions.
I appreciate it. Whose Super Bowl pick was that?
Not mine.
I had them in the Super Bowl.
Really? What? Just because they beat the Bengals last year in the playoffs?
No, they were they had been building up. This team moved to the next level every year, and they added some pieces, and Andrew Luck was going to be have his superstar year. I thought, listen, let's go back and revisit some of your picks from before the season.
I'm just trying to insert myself into this conversation, so anytime I can make fun of anytime I can make fun of Paul's preseason predictions or predictions at all, I'll back off now. That's so jaggy. That was jaggy of me.
It was.
The jaggy
moment.
Try to pull that out. I'll only say, so now here we are, five wins, and we have approached. By the way, there is the possibility of them still winning the AFC South currently at 5-8.
And I actually threw this out today on Twitter, where we believe everything on Twitter.
Yes.
That said, if they somehow do that, I'll even spring for dessert. On top of the meal, I'll even spring for dessert. So you've got double possibilities.
Double possibilities. Bananas Foster is my call. That's what I'm going to go for. Although we'll go through the menu here in a second.
Yeah, if they were to win the division, you deserve a Bananas Foster. And I'll enjoy one with you just because that would be the most unbelievable happening in the history of professional sports.
And here's what we need to get trending for all our BBP listeners is there is a possibility because the Texans play the Jags in Week 17 in what could end up being a mano-a-mano for the title if the Colts continue to fall off the map here.
The march for seven wins is on.
The march for seven wins could be on, and you could see that. And if that happens, often the league wants, if they have a single game that will decide and is not connected to anything else, that's the one they want as their flex game. So, hashtag flex the Jags.
I like hashtag flex the Jags.
Yes, hashtag flex the Jags.
That's what we need because this is – are really the only desire I have outside of getting one more win for the rest of the season. And if they are getting flexed, it means that
it's already happened. You can celebrate by getting done with your work that day when the Bengals play the Ravens and enjoy yourself just to kind of kick back and relax because they flex the Jags.
They flex the Jags.
And you'll be able to watch it.
And you'll be able to watch it. And so here we are. This is actually the perfect week to have you on because if you'd gone back before last week, we'd have pretty much said they got to beat the Colts and they got to beat.
That's correct.
This week's opponent, because Atlanta at home, Atlanta who has one win since starting 5-0, and that was by 3 points against the Tennessee Titans.
Yes. Brutal.
Brutal. And I know what it's like to lose by 3 points to the Tennessee Titans. I'm still so livid over that 87-yard quarterback scramble.
That was my favorite moment in Cleveland, by the way, because you got all happy that the Jaguars had taken the lead, and I was tweeting something that happened in the game out and just happened to see the timeline, and there it was. I said, might want to look at Twitter, and all of a sudden I hear from down the row, ah, Mariota, not again.
Every week we've learned to not get too invested in the first three quarters of these Jaguars games.
It's usually when we're writing on deadline, it's a good way to kind of break up the monotony for a minute or so you don't make yourself crazy. So it's a good thing.
See what happened. So here we are. I mean, this is probably the one because then they got to go to the Saints and then they've got to go to the Texans, which will be either one of those are more challenging than the lowly reeling
Although
Falcons.
Promises have been changes have been promised in Atlanta. They've been threatened in Atlanta. So maybe this is the week that the Falcons rise back up. They realize, all right, not much left to play for other than our jobs for the last three games. Matt Ryan's a pro's pro.
Oh,
right.
Matt Ryan's falling apart right now. You know what? Jaguars offense is on fire right now.
The AFC and NFC South are so bad.
They're so bad.
They are so bad.
It's really
other awful than Carolina.
Yeah. You're not going to get support from me. I'm not a believer.
Yeah. So here's what we need to do now. Let's take a peek at the menu, shall we?
Do you want to do this, Skinny?
I do.
Let's just take a quick peek at the menu.
Here's the thing. I have
freelance money coming. I got to see if I need to fudge like an extra freelance gig here.
I still
to pay
think
for it.
This
I
is
still,
not me feeling comfortable.
No,
by
I was
going
to say I still think my partner is in the. I think a three-game losing streak is really.
Is that out of the realm for
no,
this team? No.
I think it's in the cards.
I counted all year on some garbage December wins, though. This is what I counted on.
This is your garbage December win that you were counting on, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's got to happen.
Here's the only other part before you dive into the menu. Don't forget, this week they probably will be a home favorite.
Oh, and they're 1-1 in that scenario.
Oh,
in the last 54 games.
0-1 this year.
That's so jaggy.
Don't go against the trend.
Oh, yeah, don't go against the trend. So we've got – is there going to be an appetizer involved?
Sure. The only thing I didn't say initially was dessert, so I'm throwing dessert in if they somehow win the division.
Yes.
Cocktails are involved.
Cocktails are involved.
They are involved.
See, boy, this
I don't want to see you get.
There's a lot
here's
of.
What I'm
one.
Hoping. I'm gonna get you plowed on cocktails. You'll be so drunk you won't be able to order food. And then I'll be out at like $60.
That's the hope. Well, listen, there is.
Or you
is
just
a,
start shoving like breadsticks in your mouth and go, I'm good, I'm full.
Yes. Well, you've got the colossal crab cake is $18.75. The seafood fettuccine Alfredo for two appetizer is $27.
Well, of course it is.
If we're just going with the appetizer, there's a raw bar, of course.
Scallops.
Now salads not included in your main meal.
That's
so there's
got
to be a salad. A classic Caesar, which I assume is
I
the
love
side,
classic Caesar.
Is $12.75. I assume it's very nice.
I believe they make it at your table.
They
I believe,
better.
I believe they do.
They better have a side of gold
Not just
nuggets.
Anchovy paste, real anchovies.
Absolutely.
Not just garlic like sprinkles on there, real garlic.
Here it is from the captain's table. So this is the full captain's table
right.
dessert, the bananas Foster 4-2. I'll split it with you.
I appreciate that.
Flambéed bananas, walnuts, hazelnuts, syrup, and vanilla
Sounds
ice cream.
Sounds delicious.
I think I think it's going to be pretty good.
$26.40?
Nope. It's only $18.
It's a deal. It's a steal. For the Jags getting on the playoffs, that's a bargain.
You're getting off cheap. You're getting off cheap, I think. So then you start getting into the
steaks. Well, we've gone to appetizers and this. Yeah, we haven't gone to the main course yet.
Yeah, it's time now. So here we get Cha-ching. Into the steaks. You've got – now, they have multiple Bengals – items here. The Muhammad Sanu has his own. The dry aged center cut porterhouse that's $70.
Although I think
the AJ Tomahawk
it's
is 82.
Jacksonville. It's got. I don't. Can we tie it to the? Can we tie it to the Panhandle?
Although the only thing I would tell you is,
if you think I'm not getting a steak
say,
at this place,
this
you
tell
are
you.
Crazy.
If you're going to the precinct. You best be getting a steak.
All right, I was trying to help out one of y'all.
Seafood is a secondary thing.
I'll go all surf right. and turf.
Of course you will.
But, I mean.
Lay that one on me, Slick.
So, okay. Now, listen, I could pick it easy on you. If I go surf and turf, you've got the AJ Green is $51. It's just a New York 14-ounce New York strip. You got the Whitworth.
And that'll never talk back to you either, by the way.
No. there's no Geno Atkins.
There's no Geno
just
Atkins.
A silent assassin. So maybe the closest we get to an actual comment from Gino all year would be talking to his steak. We can go into the steak and lobster. Here we go. A 12-ounce cold water lobster tail and a 9-ounce fillet for $88.
Can they
stuff that with something else?
Here's the only caveat. I made this to you, right? Whatever you order, you must eat. There's no doggy bag. There's no take home.
Absolutely.
Whatever you order, you must eat.
Don't worry about that.
Okay.
Now, of course, you know, if it were me, I'm not saying it's going to be me. I'm crowning my steak. You've got you can crown it with roasted garlic.
You.
You can crown it with roasted
this
garlic
just brings,
butter.
You know what? Now this just brought in the Denny Green drop for when this bet.
Exactly.
Now yes. we get to use
now
that.
Now we get to
so,
crown
you.
Crown yes. that. Crown that steak. Crown that steak.
Crown it. Now, everyone is that knows that you go to Jeffrey's, you got to get it. You got to get your steak Collinsworth, which is the crowning topping.
Yes, indeed.
That's $10.
Okay,
it's a $10 type. So, I mean, this is what's on the line now.
About $1.60. Keep going.
Up to $1.60. I mean, and that, I think that could probably be enough. It plus drinks. Who never know. I mean, that's how we got in this situation, so you never know how many of those there will
that's a very good point. And the best part is this will come after the season when we don't have as much responsibility as we currently have, so
no.
There might be a cocktail.
Okay, little. We like to bring you inside, behind the scenes on the BBP, so here I'm watching these two discuss this.
Uh-huh.
And listeners, both of these men are slight pinkish hue.
Yeah.
They're both very uncomfortable
yes.
with this situation because both of them kind of think they're going to win and they kind of think they're going to lose. And
yep.
as someone, I'm gonna have to live tweet this meal.
This
say,
will
we're,
be live tweeted.
I was going to say, neither one of us are exuding like the AJ
no,
and Karen
Collins.
We're going to step in and get this job done.
Yo,
no, we're
no,
both right
no.
now in. Yeah, I think
well,
I can do it. Yeah, maybe
both these guys
are
a little tight. I'm going to tell you guys. Tell you
I've been prepared. I've had a little like Jaguars piggy bank off to the side that I've been dropping change and some extra dollars in. I've got some Canadian cash still that I didn't redo from my trip up to Toronto that I'm going to have to use.
You know what?
Maybe I can pull that out.
I've got some pesos left. They're worth a lot, aren't they? From my last trip to Mexico.
You might need that might get you a quarter of a Collins worth,
okay.
I think. You might get half crowned.
It's not going to help me. Can I pay for the parking meter with it?
No.
Darn it.
You'll have to get, well, yeah, and it's clearly a valet.
Oh, clearly. That's a good point. Yeah, so you're right.
We'll ride together.
That's a good call. Yeah.
So, point being, I think we've officially set ourselves up for whatever happens. Wow. Is going to be just completely ugly.
Well, I as you do, we like to do freelance, and this is one of those ones where...
So anybody out there that's listening to this...
Yeah, anyone that needs a high school game done, yeah, I like high school sports.
I'd be happy
sports,
to string for you. You know, really anything.
The Xenia Gazette. If you need something down this way, I can write a gamer for $177.43, if that's okay.
Well, yeah, whatever it takes on the side, we'll see what we can do. I feel like, you know, my thought was this has gotten so much conversation material here on our podcast, yeah. And really gotten everybody. I mean, I have readers. I had a man at Beyond the Stripes when I was in the bathroom. God love him. Listens every week. I hope he's listening right now. Who said to me, "Man, I don't know. I don't feel good about your Jaguars bet." And I said, "Oh my goodness, I know." And I thought, man, people are approaching me in the bathroom.
That's awesome.
About this.
That's awesome.
How popular it's become. So that tells me. This should be clearly something I can expense.
And, sir, if you'd like to cash in, give me like $10 to help along the meal.
We're going to have a GoFundMe.
We should do a GoFundMe.
Find me in a bathroom somewhere.
If you start walking into looking for skinny in a bathroom with money in your hand, I feel like it's a bad look.
And just let me make sure I zip up first, and then we'll have the transaction occur, because it'll look really awkward if not.
Yeah, I hope it's all the up and up away from the stalls and the urinals. I think we've set the stage pretty good for whatever will occur. And of course, we will keep everyone up to date on when this is actually. Maybe viewers or listeners can come and can come join us if they'd like to.
Welcome to watch two stupid idiots. After several glasses of wine and stuff is dripping down our chin, it won't be a pretty sight.
It will definitely be a live tweet involved.
Here's the funny part. I do believe, because it's a 1 o'clock kickoff, correct, for the Falcons and Jaguars? So we will know by the time the Bengals kick off Sunday.
Oh, we will.
Where things stand.
We will. Well, that'll be good pregame watching for us.
It really will be.
Oh, man.
Inactives, if we're late with the inactives, folks, we're sorry.
We're sorry.
We're watching the end of Jaguars. We're watching part of the Jaguars game.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of focus there. And then if the Jaguars win, then we'll keep an eye out for #FlexTheJags.
I'll be rooting for it then.
Because we want to see them in prime time where they truly belong.
The one thing I appreciate about you is you didn't back down on this bet.
I
neither
didn't.
Did I.
We both had some very low moments, and there's a chance that I'm about to have the lowest. It's the only fitting way this can end, really, a bet that's all about futility is with epic futility and a three-game losing streak.
I'm seeing three games, man.
I know.
Telling you.
I smell it, man.
And I think they're going to have the lead in each of these three games.
And that'll even make it more painful.
Oh, yeah.
While we got you here... what do you think about the Bengals?
this is a Bengals podcast, correct?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. Huh. It might be.
Well, considering that the Jags might be playing a wild card game at Paul Brown Stadium.
How great would that be? As much futility as, unfortunately, the Bengals have had in the playoffs, and obviously with the AFC South, with the Colts last year and the Texans a couple of times, how about the Jaguars win, somehow come here in that first-round game, and that's the team that beats the Bengals and keeps them winning?
Well, there's no
the
way they could come here. The Bengals would have to get the five and go to Jacksonville. Unless Jacksonville won a game and then ended up...
The Bengals could still be...
Because they have to be the four, because that
that's
team
correct,
has to host.
Right. That's correct. That's right.
You have to host. So they would have to win one already and then come here.
That's correct. That is correct. You're
which
right.
is an even more exciting
neither one's a wild
concept.
Card.
Why not?
They're both
either
divisional
way.
Champs. That'd even be better.
We have to take a trip to Jacksonville to cover the Bengals in the first-round playoff game.
How great would that be?
I just imagine that scenario. I'll tell you what. If that happens, I will take you to the nicest steakhouse we can find in Jacksonville.
There it is. I baited him just like I wanted. And there it was.
And we brought it full circle.
You can't help yourself.
Skinny, it's been a joy having you back here.
Appreciate it.
On the podcast. And this bet has been fun. And I'm just happy that there's a chance. I'm not going to completely be embarrassed by this team for the second straight year, because they've been a real source of you being able to berate me for a long time now. Pretty much since I've known you.
You ran your mouth. I ran it back. And looks like you're on the cusp of clinching. But then again, so were the Bengals until
something happens. Let's hope Blake Bortles doesn't try to tackle somebody after one of the many picks he'll probably throw, which is always a real possibility.
That would be something.
All right, we'll try to get a letter into the Ravens PR staff to get Elvis Dumervil on the the conference call week 17 just for you to berate him.
You know what? I will ask him then and there.
All right, Skinny, thanks for
joining
us. Guys,
thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to you later. All right. Man, that was fun.
Yeah, it was.
That was fun. And
that's, you know, we've had Lapp, we've had Dan Horde, we've had some good guests. But that was pure entertainment for me.
really
you're still red. You're both still kind of pinkishly nervous.
Yeah, I know. That was a special this bet has just, it's really become a life of its own, I'm telling you, man. When my guy who loves the BBP jumped up to me and said, "Hey," in the bathroom to me, "your Jags are in trouble, man." I tell you, man, this bet is officially gone too far. It has become quite a thing the way it's being followed. But hey, that just means that you're listening and that you love the BBP, because that means you're listening to the whole damn thing.
Right.
We usually talk about it in the last 10 minutes, which you're deep in at that point.
Right.
So we love the people that love that. So shout out to all of you that have sent anything to me. All the people that still send me tweets every Sunday, so I can't believe I'm sitting here rooting for the Jags watching this game. Learn to appreciate bad football, which I think this is all about.
Right.
So let's get out of here. It's going to be, the next couple of weeks are going to be some weird schedules. We're going to be doing our best to get the podcast to you on Tuesday, but with West Coast trips and a Monday night game and Christmas and all the stuff that's going on, just know that we're doing our best to get it to you as soon as we possibly can, right, after these games. So we'll be out there on the West Coast in San Francisco, excited to head back out there again. And as the Bengals take on the Niners, thankfully in the game that is no longer a night game. Now it's a 4:25 Eastern kick, and then we'll come back here and get back as soon as we can and attempt to bring you the podcast and reaction from that, which will be leading into a huge game on Monday Night Football against Denver Broncos. Until then, it only seems right, Jim, that we really offer up a song that probably was being played while everyone awaited the news on Andy Dalton's meeting with the hand specialist, and will kind of be played over the next month here inside Paul Brown Stadium, and that's by
Player.
Player. That's by Player. And it's "Baby Come Back."
Because I'm not gonna add it to it.
I thought it was my backup.
I'm hanging.
You left me hanging. You did leave me hanging there. That's what it is. "Baby Come Back" by Player. And so you'll hear this going through the hallways here at PBS. But until then, for Jimmy Sarsko, Paul Daniel Jr., we will talk to you later from the BBP.
Spending all my nights, all my money, going out on the town. Doing anything just to get you off of my mind. But when the morning comes, I'm right back where I started again. And trying to forget you is just a waste of time. A mask of false bravado, trying to keep up a smile that hides a tear.